So as you know, we are celebrating something very important today, our mission in Haiti, hope. And we have a couple of great speakers going to talk about that wonderful mission. Jim Myers is the first one, and he has been to Haiti 40 or 50 times. He's been a chair of the Board of Hope, and he's presently a member. He knows quite a bit about that country. And Paul Sanderson is the second speaker, and he's been there 3 times and has a great love for the people there. So please help me welcome Jim and Paul.
Good morning. Thank you, Father Jim, Reverend Myra, and the entire Spiritus community for giving me this opportunity to share a little bit about the work of Hope, Haiti Outreach Projet Espoir. I'm joined this morning by other members of the Hope Board, Mr. Mike Shields, who served as chairman of the board and a great supporter of our work, Aaron Green, my wife, who is the interim executive director and board member, Kelly Myers, who has been our secretary, it seems like forever, and a great supporter. And I'm really privileged to be also joined by Monica Chiarici, who is the daughter of the founder and also the doppelganger of Rosemary Chiarici. So it's a great privilege to be here. As you all know, Hope and the work we are doing in Bourne, Haiti would not exist without the strong roots and foundation provided by this loving and supportive congregation. I want to thank you all very much for that support. To be honest, I would really rather not be standing here today. I would much rather be sitting amongst you, listening to my dear friend, Rosemary Chiarici, talk to you about Bourne and our work, as she has done for years. I would rather hear Rosemary's warm and patient voice walk you through the importance of the support that you provide and encouraging you to keep Bourne and the people there in your thoughts and hearts and prayers, not just at this time, but throughout the year. She would let you know how hard the Hope team in Bourne works to provide the best possible care for their community. She would gently nudge us all out of our worlds of relative abundance to remind us that people in Haiti are innovative, intelligent, hardworking, and resilient in face of struggles and challenges that would test the endurance and resolve of the strongest among us. She would let you know that we can provide high-impact mobile clinics to 300 and 400 people at a cost of less than $12 a person. She would tell you about the innovative and culturally sensitive programs that our medical director, Dr. Tony Voltaire, has devised to serve the most vulnerable in our community. She would do this in her voice, reflecting her 27 years of work to serve and love and care for a place that she embraced in partnership with you so many years ago. But as you all know, we lost our dear friend this August after a long fight with renal cancer. And you are now stuck listening to me, trying my best to channel the spirit of my dear friend. My wife, Erin, and I had the privilege of spending a good amount of time with Rosemary and Alec and their family in her final months. Even in the face of pending death, their house was perpetually full of life. Family came from near and far, and those who couldn't come were connected virtually. Some cried, but most laughed and expressed their gratitude for all that RM, as we called her, had taught them. Friends and coworkers came from around the world. During this time, I was struck by the love between Alec and Rosemary. Being in their presence, you could feel the bond of two people who fell instantaneously in love and who moved through life intertwined in both spirit and in their deeds. They achieved a great deal together, including creating a home where such extraordinary love flowed easily over everything and everyone, where forgiveness, tenderness, kindness, and joy flourished. It was this home that incubated hope. There was incredibly poignant moments in our final days with Rosemary, some of them occurring in the worst struggles that come with debilitating disease. It is in these moments when you see the true dignity and divinity of a person. It was in these moments when we were brutally confronted by Rosemary's failing body that we were also overwhelmed by the power and vitality of her spirit. It was an extraordinary reminder that our mortal bodies are simply vessels for the eternal spirit. Rosemary's spirit was radiant, vigorous, and generous. She loved working in the field, as she would say, in Bourne. She climbed mountains, she hiked for miles, she hugged children, she embraced people who were sick, survived illness and injury there, and through it all, she absolutely loved it. She worked tirelessly to find the resources and partnerships necessary to bring health care to this poor and remote corner of the world. Her spirit was invincible. In a conversation with Dr. Tony, Rosemary reminded us all of how the spirit works. In her final week, she had an opportunity to say goodbye to all of us who had worked with her in Hope. Now, I want you to imagine the impact that this incredible woman had on our young and relatively inexperienced medical director. She and Mike Shields hired Tony Voltaire and gave him the reins of what was to become one of the most successful healthcare systems in northern Haiti. They worked side by side for almost 15 years building this extraordinary project. So imagine the sorrow and fear he must have felt when he learned that he was going to die, that she was going to die. And imagine, too, the peace he felt when Rosemary said to Tony, "Don't be sad. I'll be working for Hope after I'm gone." I believe with all my heart that Rosemary is standing right here with me. She is among us. She is working for Hope and reminding us, as she has for so many years, that we must continue the work in Bourne. For those of you who have never been to the commune of Bourne, I want you to imagine a place of incredible tropical beauty, a place where, despite crushing poverty, people smile and laugh easily. Imagine a place where the road quite literally ends and where people live in small communities scattered across a mountainous landscape carved up by rivers that ebb and flood with seasonal rains. In the rainy season, the days are hot and humid, and nights can be chilly in the high mountains. There is no running water nor electricity. Travel is almost entirely on foot along paths that connect the little villages to two small market towns, Tibouk and the village of Bourne. The walk from the most remote areas of the commune to the town of Bourne can be daunting even on a good day, taking up to 10 hours. So now imagine you are sick or having pains from a complicated pregnancy. You are hemorrhaging and in pain. And imagine trying to make your way down the mountains, across the rivers, probably in your bare feet, probably hungry, to get to the road so that you could then hopefully find someone who could drive you another 3 to 5 hours, depending on the road conditions. And let me tell you, what passes for a road in Haiti is not a road here. To get you to Cap Haitien, only to wait in line at an overcrowded, understaffed hospital. Imagine yourself or your child dying because, despite of all your efforts, you didn't get there in time. You see, my friends, this would be the story of every severely ill person in Bourne if it weren't for Hope, the project that you all started. Thanks to you and Rosemary Chiarici, there is a hospital in Bourne and a clinic in Tibouk. We operate mobile clinics where we literally pack up caravans of mules and put medical supplies on the top of our heads and hike hours to ensure the most remote areas have access to care. We conduct cervical cancer screenings, HIV/AIDS testing and treatment. We conduct community education programs, and the list goes on. Dr. Tony wanted me to share a story about one of the first mobile clinics, one supported by Spiritus Christi. In the words of Dr. Tony, "Champagne is the highest mountain in Bourne. The surrounding area is very mountainous and difficult to reach. People who live there really come to town. At this particular mobile clinic, we saw a man who had severely injured his leg with a farm implement. His leg had become badly infected, and the pain was so severe he was not able to walk nor sleep. He had tried all of the local remedies, but to no avail. Our medical team cleaned and dressed the wound and provided topical and antibacterial treatments to get him back on the path to fully living of life. By the next day, he came to tell us that he had slept for the first time in 10 days, and he fully recovered. The next time we saw him, he was profusely thankful. This is what I remember about these clinics and how they impact our work." I could tell you so many similar stories. The needs in Haiti seem almost unlimited. There literally is always something new to confront. Hurricanes give way to earthquakes, and earthquakes give way to cholera, and cholera gives way to chikungunya, and the list goes on to now include COVID-19. Hunger and lack are pervasive. The point is that the work you support saves lives and gives people hope. This work will continue, and the connection between hope and this parish will remain strong. The friendships and connections among us will grow and flourish as we mourn the loss of our dear friend, Rosemarie. I'm personally incredibly grateful and indebted to Father Jim, Reverend Myra, Mary Rammerman, and members of the Spiritist community like Kelly Myers, Bill and Kathleen Welch, Paul Sanderson, Lim Hamilton, and so many more who have given so generously of their time and treasure. Thank you all very, very much. I wish you all the best in the coming holiday season, and I pray that you stay safe and well. Thank you.
Bonjour. That was a word we heard a lot walking down the streets in Haiti. Everyone you passed had a smile on their face and would say, bonjour, something we could learn from. It was about 20 years ago that our fellow parishioner, Bill Welch, and I were having a discussion about Haiti. He told me he'd been there a couple times and that he was going back, and that when he went back, he would like to take an electrician and a plumber with him. Would I be interested in being that plumber? I thought, wow, Haiti, that's a tropical paradise, right? I'd love to go there. But how do you get there? Well, at the time, there was a lot of civil unrest going on, so we had to table those plans for a few years. You fast forward about 9 years, and the opportunity presented itself once again. I got nervous. What was I going to wear? What were we going to eat? How the heck do you get there? Well, you fly to Port-au-Prince, which is located at the southern end of the country. You hop on a puddle jumper, and you fly to Cape Haitien, which is a little bit closer to Bourne. But then you get in a car that you share with some of Rosemarie's students and some live chickens, and you drive up a less than stellar highway to the hospital. Now, Haiti's a beautiful country. You got mountains over here, ocean over there, but it's also very, very poor. So very poor. I'm a Vietnam veteran. Not that that makes me an expert, but it did show me what squalor looked like. Haiti's squalor compared to Vietnam is nothing. But these people also suffered. Like the Vietnamese, the Haitian people appeared to be happy with what they had. They had no idea that life was different everywhere else. Nor were they influenced by all of the advertisements for a better life that we are bombarded with. So off to the hospital we go. Can you imagine going into a hospital and not getting at least a semi-private room? Well, in Haiti, you're grateful just to be seen. Here in America, you go to the hospital, you call an ambulance. Like Jim was saying, in Haiti, you're asking for somebody to carry you on a door. How would you like to go to the hospital if the only water that you had was roof runoff water that they collected in a cement cistern that had to be there for 50 years? Staff would regularly dip a bucket and carry it inside, using that same water to either wash their clothes or take a bucket bath or clean one of the operating rooms. Our mission was to connect the spring at the reservoir that Sarah Brownell from our parish was very instrumental in construction of. The route that this supply line took from that reservoir back to the hospital was a rough one. Not a lot of piping support on the way down, and people had tapped into the line so that they could get their water without having to go to the either end. Making those repairs and connecting the main supply was complete. No more baths in a bucket. We accomplished all this, among other things, by working 12 to 14 hour days. I'm not really sure where all that energy came from. I think the big guy was giving us the stamina. About a year later, Dr. Tony was able to get some solar panels, but he needed power run to each of these rooms, the office, the birthing room. I guess we were the low bid because we got the job. We went back, and we had to be drilling holes through concrete walls to run the conduit and the lights into that room. We were drilling through a birthing room, and a lady was giving birth to a child. We asked, should we stop? They said, no, we need these lights. We suggested that they call the child Dusty. Having these solar panels would eliminate the need to rely on a temperamental generator, one that had a limited fuel capacity. There weren't a lot of quick fills nearby. Gasoline was sold in quart bottles. So it would take quite a few of those to fill up that generator. I have to say it was humbling to be part of that project. It would mean so much to so many people. Now you got the kids. Those of you that know me like know that I'm a big kid. I was a Sunday school teacher and enjoyed trying to teach kids different ways to live their lives. These kids were very appreciative. I mean, you give a kid a pencil or a little plastic ring, they were so happy with that. Maybe a Matchbox car. They had never had a present just given to them. We were able to connect to these kids through clapping games, counting games, guessing games, and a frisbee. I also brought a book with me that had pictures of different items that were written in both Haitian and English. So some of the time spent there was teaching English to the children and learning Creole. We also spent a lot of time teaching the guys that were there. Everyone was anxious to help, showing how it was done so that they could carry on after we left. There was no lack of enthusiasm. Give any guy a power tool and he becomes Mr. Fix-It, am I right? Well, everyone wanted to assist in some way. They were resourceful, to say the least, making do with what they had. Talented craftsmen with limited resources. I don't know how many of you have seen the metal art that has been done by Haitian guys, but it was a 55-gallon drum top that he spent days hammering on, and it turned into a beautiful piece of art. We were fortunate that we got two meals a day while we were there, showing how it was done. Excuse me. We were fortunate to get two meals a day, breakfast and something later in the day. We'd be working alongside the guys, and we'd get called away to eat. Those were some mixed emotions for sure. You guys keep working. We're just going to go get a bite to eat. We'll be back. One of the guys there told me that he had trouble sleeping because he was so hungry. I told him I'd had trouble sleeping because I ate too much. I took a ton of pictures when I was there, and I wanted to share them with the folks. So the night before we were to leave, we had a little party. We had Kool-Aid, popcorn, you know, first class all the way. We had a TV hooked up and showed to show the kids the photos, and we invited the neighborhood to join us. Everyone showed up dressed as if they were headed to a red carpet event. Boys in suits, girls in their fancy dresses. The Sunday school students here at Spiritus had made some paper hearts that I was able to take with me and deliver to the kids there. The next thing you know, we're having a talent show. This kid gets up and starts, he's a comedian, and he's got the audience laughing like crazy. We have no idea what he's talking about. No, he wasn't talking about us because we never heard the word blanc ever. Girls were singing in a cappella, everything in Creole. Helped us to step back and listen and appreciate. It had to be really special for them also to perform in front of their community. I don't think they had many opportunities to show off their talents. My third trip to Haiti had to be the most unique one. Bill, Brother John, and I flew from Miami, Florida, to the Grand Caicos Islands with a gentleman who had bought a plane in a box and built it, Mr. Tom Fossil. He donated his time, his plane, and his efforts to get us there. We're sitting at dinner one night, and Tom was collecting some straws off of the table. I said, "What are those for, Tom?" He said, "Well, I stick them together and then I dip the fuel tanks to make sure we have enough gas in there." Oh, so glad God was our co-pilot. This trip was just after the earthquake that rocked Port-au-Prince. We were there to erect a temporary shelter for the overflow from the hospital. So many of the people that once lived in Bourne had gone to Port-au-Prince for a better life, and they were now returning to seeking medical attention. It was great to see the hospital up and running with modern conveniences like water and electricity. Knowing that the work that has been done and the work that needs to be done is beneficial to so many appreciative people. We had to run new water lines to some new showers and a kitchen that was being used by the overflow folks. We installed ceiling fans and enclosed the structure with waterproof tarps. All that's been done in Haiti and all that is needed to be done in Haiti is due in large part to the generous support of this group here. I want to tell you that I'm honored and humbled, and I want to thank you all for letting me be a small part of such a large project. Thank you.